Jesus makes statements like, if you look in the intro, if you want to receive, you have to give. If you want to be forgiven, you have to forgive. If you want to lead, you have to serve. And if you want to keep your life, you have to lay it down. You have to lose it. This is what Jesus says. Every one of these are countercultural. Every one of these are the exact opposite of what we would think. When Jesus makes these claims, he makes a whole series of claims and many more like these that basically shatter who we are. And he says, this is my way, and it's a strange way. And Paul got it. If anybody got it, Paul got it. Here was this educated, brilliant Jewish scholar, and in fact, a world history professor, a Jewish atheist, would actually start off every lecture of Christianity by saying, if a man as learned as Saul, who became Paul the Apostle, could take this seriously, we have to take these claims seriously. Why? Because there is something about Paul that shattered everything else when he met Jesus. Jesus changed him. And Paul embraced a strange gospel. And in two ways, he explains that gospel to us in these verses. And so I want you to begin with me by reading in Philippians 1, verses 21 through 30, the end of this chapter. If you'd stand, if you wish, and read with us. For to me, to live is Christ, to die is gain. But if I live on in the flesh, this will mean fruit for my labor. Yet what I shall choose, I cannot tell. For I am hard-pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, to remain in the flesh is more needful for you. And being confident of this, I know that I shall remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy of faith, that your rejoicing for me may be more abundant in Jesus Christ by my coming to you again. Only let your conduct be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of your affairs, that you stand fast with one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel, and not in any way terrified by your adversaries, which to them is a proof of perdition, but to you of salvation, and that from God. For to you it has been granted on behalf of Christ not only to believe on him, but also to suffer for his sake, having the same conflict which you saw in me and now hear is in me. You may be seated. Now this passage really breaks down two ways. It breaks down first into the strange paradox of the gospel. And Paul unpacks that for us in verses 21 and 20 through 26. And what is a paradox? It's not two doctors together. And good, you caught that. And so, sorry, that was terrible. I know, it's old and terrible still. But a paradox means it's sort of like there are two ends to this. If you can imagine a rainbow and you see a beautiful rainbow going up like this and then the clouds, well, you think that rainbow's got to join up there, but you don't see the joining of it. Or maybe you see two railroad tracks and it looks like if you look far enough down the line like they meet, but they really never do, but they run parallel to one another. And in the same way, a paradox is two seemingly strange and inconsistent truths that are both true. And so Paul talks about this and he unpacks this in these first verses when he talks about the paradox of the gospel. And notice the first thing he says that the desire for joyful departure, he says, for to me to live is Christ and to die is gain in verse 21. To die is gain. Now, I don't know anybody here that honestly says, boy, I can't wait to die. You know, no matter how much we think we want to say this with Paul, every one of us has to admit in our flesh, we like it here. We're kind of afraid of the next step. There's a tiniest bit of uncertainty about it. I believe the words of Jesus. I do, with all my heart. I believe that when I die, to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord, as Miss Sarah read. I believe that. I'm not getting on the next train. I mean, you know, unless I don't have any choice about the matter, I could die of a heart attack before this sermon ends, walk out and get hit by a car. All kinds of things could happen. We pulled a guy out of a car the other night. watched a wreck happen and right in front of us and pulled a guy out of a car, and I was sure he was dead. And the truck burned up, and if we hadn't gotten him out, the fire department didn't get there in time. We hadn't gotten him out, and he got up and walked around after a minute, and I thought, he was totally unconscious when we dragged him out, and I thought, goodness gracious, this guy, we tried to get him to sit down, and he wouldn't. The paramedics came over and dealt with him finally, but I thought he was dead. And I'm telling you, it made me more aware of the reality of these verses, because we are going to die, but most of us don't think about it like Paul did. Paul's in a Roman prison, and he said, I'd rather go on and be with Jesus. He says in verse 21, to be with Christ is gain. Gain. Now think about that. He so saw heaven's reality that for him, this brilliant intellectual leaving earth was the best thing he could do. It was gain. In fact, he says in verse 23, he says, I have a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. He didn't say a little better. He said far better. Paul had caught a glimpse. He tells us in one of his other letters in 2 Corinthians that he had been up in the third heavens and he had seen the glory of what it would be like. And Paul said, it's far better. I'm so excited about going. I can't wait to be there. That's this incredible desire. He's got this joyful desire to depart and be with the Lord. I can't wait to go be with Jesus. Now think about that. It's hard for us to get there. Sometimes when I'm in the middle of worship, I think, man, I wonder what heaven's going to be like. And you see little glimpses here and there. God lets you see a little bit. Sometimes it's like the curtain's unveiled just a bit. You get to taste a little bit what it's going to be like. But for Paul, he said, it's far better. But then he says the other part of this paradox. If you look there in verse 22, he says this, but if I live on in the flesh, this will mean fruit from my labor, and what I choose, I cannot tell. He says this, there's not only a desire for a joyful departure, he says, but there's a demand for a fruitful presence. In other words, if I'm going to leave, I need to be here now to accomplish what God's got me for. Look, he says, first off, there's the presence of Christ in Paul. Go back to verse 21 and listen to what he says. To me, to live is Christ. There's no is in there. To me, to live, Christ. Paul was totally preoccupied with the person of Jesus Christ. Jesus empowered him in his service. Jesus enslaved him as a master, but a master whom he loved. Paul was enthralled with the person of Jesus Christ. Jesus wasn't a good idea, a religious observation. Jesus was the Lord of heaven and earth who had captured Paul's heart. He's the one who knocked him to his knees on the Damascus road and changed him. He knew he was Lord. He knew he was worthy to worship. He knew that his cross was for him. He knew that his forgiveness was from him. He knew that all that he could never earn by religion, all that he had tried to earn in Judaism, all that he had attempted to gain by being a Pharisee, and couldn't get, that Jesus had given him on that Damascus road. And so for Paul, it wasn't religion. It wasn't that he found a new religion that was better than the old one. It was that he had been embraced in a relationship that was transforming. He had a purpose for living. Look what he says there. He says in verse, he says, I want to be fruitful. He says this, he says, it's verse 24, it's to remain in the flesh is more needful for you. So I'm going to be there because for three things. Number one, I want to make sure that you progress. Look in verse 25, being confident of this, I know that I shall remain and continue with you for your progress. Paul says, I want to see your progress in the faith. But not only progress, not only moving forward and getting to know this faith and walking in it more and more, but joy. Paul says, listen, it's not going to make you happy. In fact, C.S. Lewis used to say, who's one of my heroes, he said, if you're looking for happiness in religion, I don't recommend Christianity. He said, if you're just looking for happiness, a bottle of port will do you well. That's wine. But he said, I don't recommend Christianity for happiness, but joy is a different story. What's joy? Joy is the recognition of God's presence when you're in a prison cell. Joy is when you're beaten and you can sing. Joy is when, in spite of everything else that happens, you know God is with you right now. Joy is the overwhelming assurance of God's mighty presence in your life. Joy is the privilege of knowing that right now, no matter what's going on with me, that God, the God I serve, is in control of heaven and earth, and nothing can touch me that doesn't come through His hand, that He doesn't allow for my good and for His glory. That's joy. And Paul says, I want you to have joy. You see, the Philippians needed joy. They needed their faith. If you look in verse 25, he says, yeah, I want you to have joy in your faith. And third, I want you to have a rejoicing that you're going to see me again. Paul said, I'm coming back. I'm not just in death, but I'm going to get out of this jail and I'm going to get to pass through Philippi again and see you again. And so your prayers are going to accomplish that. So Paul says in verse 26, he says, your rejoicing for me may be more abundant in Jesus Christ, by my coming to you again. Paul says, I'm going to get back. I'm in jail right now, but God's going to get me out. I don't know how. Paul had an assurance that he was going to get out. And he knew he would. And so the strange paradox of the gospel is this, that here you got this guy that's in jail, and he says, you know, if it were left up to me, I'd just go be with Jesus. It's better. But since it's not left up to me, then I want to do for you what is more fruitful. And I want to tell you this, and I want you to see how important that is. Had it been left up to Paul, we wouldn't have the letter to the Philippians. Man, what a loss. Had it been left up to Paul, we wouldn't have 1st and 2nd Timothy and Titus. Because Paul wrote those letters. Had it been left up to Paul and he'd gotten to go be with Jesus, there'd be so much less that we'd have. We'd be so bereft of God's great goodness to us. And so as I look, I think, what a blessing that in this strange paradox of the gospel, Paul was left. Not what he wanted, but what God wanted to do through him. As he said, fruit needful. But notice not only the strange paradox of the gospel, notice the strange privilege of the gospel. Because in verses 27 through 30, Paul begins to unpack the privilege of the gospel. And here's what he says in verse 27. He says, only let your conduct be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of your affairs, that you stand fast in one spirit with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel, and not in any way terrified by your adversaries, which is to them a proof of perdition, but to you of salvation and that of God. Now what is he saying? Here's what he says. The strange privilege of the gospel means that you and I have been given grace. And just like the paradox of to live to die, here's the paradox of grace. Grace gives you power to live. Freedom is the power to do what's right. It's the power for the first time to do what's right. It's not the liberty to go out and do what you want. It's the power to do what's right. Freedom is the power to choose against the flesh and do what is right. And so Paul says, here's what grace does. Grace produces worthy conduct. Look in verses 27 and 28. Let me give you four things. He says, live as citizens. And you say, where's that? Well, the word conduct there means, Paul uses a strange word, not surprising in our sermon, but he uses a word he only uses twice in the New Testament. It means to live as citizens. It's from, we get our word politics from it, believe it or not. It's politeuo, and it means the idea to live as a citizen of the city, because the polis is the city. And so a politeuo is one who lives as a citizen in the city and who conducts his life properly as a citizen of the city. There might be slaves who don't conduct themselves properly. There might be beggars who don't conduct themselves properly. There might be foreigners who don't conduct themselves properly, but citizens ought to conduct themselves properly in the city. And in the Greek city-state, this was a big deal. So when Paul uses this word, he says, listen, and the Philippians were Roman citizens, and so for them, this word means even more. Paul says, you got to conduct yourselves like model citizens. You ought to be model citizens. That's what he's saying. You ought to have consistency in your life and live as citizens of the gospel. There ought to be some consistency in your life. Second, there ought to be cooperation. Now, Paul's about to hit this so many times in Philippians, one wonders if there weren't some quarrels in the church. And let me just give you a little tip about church. Anytime church gets larger than one person, there will be two opinions or three. And so there will be conflict. And it's okay. It's okay that people have different opinions as long as they submit to Christ together. See, cooperation means that you stand fast in one spirit. Verse 27. You stand united. You stand unified as God's people. See, there ought to be a unity in God's people. Listen, beloved, and you know this. I've been here a long time. We don't all have to agree together on everything. We can have differing opinions. But we subsume our opinions for the gospel's sake so the church moves forward. You know, we've had building projects. We're about to start some more, we think, sometime this year. And people have different opinions over what we ought to do. I'm kind of the opinion that opinions are like armpits. Everybody's got a couple, and most of them stink. But it's okay. We can have different opinions. And here's what's got to happen. Those opinions have to be subsumed under what is the will of God. And just say, you know what? We're going to do God's will together. That's why, and I want to tell you what's really freeing, okay, is when you get to the place where you say, I just want the will of God. I don't care what color the carpet is. I don't care what color paint we use. I mean, if chartreuse is the one everybody votes on, hey, I'm all about chartreuse, even if I don't know what it means. I'm sure it'd be awesome. Like that lady in that church that long time ago that they were discussing in business meeting about buying a chandelier. And they went on for about 20 minutes. And she said, listen, I don't care what kind of chandeliers we buy, but whatever we do, we need to get some light in this place. And so, So just learn to stand unified. Paul writes his church and says the part of the privilege of the gospel is a grace that causes us to work together. But also he says part of the privilege of the gospel is that you fight for things with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. This word striving together is the word from which we get athletics. And when you put it together, it means that you shoulder to shoulder, side by side, you train, you work, you fight for something that's really important. What's really important to you? See, if the gospel's really important, you'll fight for it. If the gospel's not important, then you'll fight for something else. But there ought to be something that energizes and motivates us that we're willing to fight for the things that are worth fighting for in this life. And when we do, we can do it with confidence. Because in verse 28, Paul says this, and you're not in any way terrified by your adversaries. What he means by this is, you don't have to live in fear of those around you. You can shame them because you're fearless. Because you know, what can they do? They can kill you. And then what? Then like Paul, to die is gain. So the worst thing they can do to you is just kill you. That's it. That's all they can do. But Paul says, so then when you're not afraid of them, that puts them to shame because it testifies to the reality of your faith. Your faith, in verse 28, says your faith shows that not only, and here's what he says, this word proof of perdition means this. It not only means that you have hope, it means they don't. They know that they're headed to destruction. That's what that means. And that's how critical this is. And so grace produces worthy conduct. But in verses 29 and 30, this is where the privilege of the gospel really kind of is strange. Grace permits us to suffer for Christ. So listen to this phrase. For to you it has been granted on the behalf of Christ. This is a grace gift. It's been granted. What's been granted? Not only to believe on his name, but to do what? To suffer for his sake to suffer. Isn't that a strange privilege? This is really the gift that nobody wants. If you remember the story of the Philistines, they captured the ark. It's one of my favorite stories in the Bible. Hophni and Phinehas took the ark out into battle like fools and got killed, and the Philistines captured the ark. And boy, they were so proud of their gift. They take it in the temple of their god, and they next morning they go in and their god's fallen on his face in front of the ark. So they have to set him back up because he's just a stone god. And the next morning they go in and he's fallen again, but this time his head's broken off and his hands are broken off and his feet are broken off, and now they're terrified. And then, at the same time, God strikes their city with bubonic plague because they have rats everywhere and people start dying, and with hemorrhoids, apparently large enough that you could make golden hemorrhoids as part of your offering to God when they want to get rid of it. So they've got to be massive. And I think by that, if you really want to see the judgment of God just unpacked, it's like after the second city, and when they take it, they get it out of their city, and it gets to the next city, same thing happens. By the time they get to the third city, the people in the third city are saying, no, don't bring it here. We don't want it. It's the gift nobody wanted. Well, so is this one. Not only has it been granted to you to believe on Jesus, but also to suffer for him. Lord, I was great with the believing. I'm pretty excited about believing on Jesus and knowing I'm going to heaven. Not so happy with the suffering part. It's a strange privilege, isn't it? Strange gift. But here's what Paul says by that. He goes on to say this. It's the same gift he had. You saw it in me when I was there. You remember I got arrested in your town, beaten in your town, put in jail in your town, and through it people came to Christ because of my suffering. And now I'm writing you from jail where you know I'm suffering. Same gift. The gift that we really don't want. Most of us are excited about the possibility and the probability of going to heaven. But when it comes to having to pay prices, any kind of suffering, where we have to choose Christ against self, where maybe we fast and don't eat, not so happy about that one. Where we pray, turn off the TV and pray, get on our faces and seek the Lord. That's not quite as much fun, Lord. Where we give our money sacrificially. Whoa. Now, Lord, listen, I love you and I'm excited about going to heaven, but hey, let's don't push this religion stuff too much. And where people mock us because we're followers of Christ. And so we say, well, what can we do to blend in instead of stand out? Strange privilege. Not the one we were looking for. But it's the gospel. Coming to Christ means swimming against the world. I've told this story several times. Still one of my favorite illustrations the Lord showed me. But when I lived in Africa, there was a river named the Zambezi River. It flowed. It's really one of the strange rivers of the world because it flows north and south both. But in its southward flow, it comes to a place called the Victoria Falls, one of the seven wonders of the world. David Livingstone, the missionary, when he looked at it, he said, it was like looking at scenes so lovely that angels in flight must have looked on them, because the smoke, the Africans call it Moseatunya, which means the smoke that thunders. And you go there and you can hear this roar for about a mile off, and you can see this cloud going up. And it's a 390-foot drop. It's a mile wide. And the Zambezi flows peacefully to it. And what most people do today, they'll go see the Zambezi River and they'll watch the river flow. And that you can actually ride on cruises that you can see hippos along the shore, and you can see crocs, and sometimes lions will come and feed. And so you'll see the animals, and it's a really beautiful, neat scene. And then there's a point where it says the point of no return. And none of the boats pass it. It's literally posted in the water. Because if you go past that in a boat, you're going over the falls. Well, that's kind of like the world today. Everybody is on the river of life, and we're floating down, and we're enjoying the beautiful scenery, and we can see the neat things, and we can kind of hear the roaring in the distance, and we can see the smoke, you know, just a little bit, but it's like far enough off that we really don't even notice it. We kind of put it out of our mind, but we're floating toward it. Those of us who are Christ followers, though, someone has yelled at us, hey, you're going the wrong way. There's destruction ahead. Turn around. And we've repented, which is to turn around. And while floating downstream is easy, you know, you're riding with the current, just kind of copacetically enjoying life, you know. When you turn around, suddenly everything's against you. You have to use muscles that you haven't used. These atrophied muscles of your flesh, you've got to use them to swim. And it's hard. And you've got an unseen current fighting against you that's pulling you down. And not only that, when you're swimming upstream and everybody else is floating down, they're not all going, oh, isn't that wonderful? Good job. You know what they're saying? Hey, fool, you're going the wrong way. So if you ever wonder why the Christian life is a life of suffering, it's because you've chosen to swim against the flow. And the unseen current, the enemy of men's souls, pulls at you and seeks to turn you away. The flesh, this old nature that we have, battles with us. It's so used to its own way that every time you take a new stroke, it fights against you and it says, oh, I don't like that. Oh, I don't like that. And the world around you says, hey, you're going the wrong way. So is it any surprise that the gospel is a strange thing? It is strange because it is a paradox that says you give your life away and you gain it. You die to gain, and living is more costly. And it is a privilege because you get to suffer with Jesus. How are you responding to the gospel? The ancient world said of the apostles, these men have turned the world upside down. Why? Because their message was so strange that it shook the foundations of everything the world knew. But really, they were just turning the world right side up. When you come to Christ, the strange gospel changes us. So how do I come to Christ, Pastor? Well, first, if you've never received Jesus as the Lord of your life, you've never bowed the knee to Him, you bow the knee to Him and say, Jesus, You are Lord, and I'm not. I surrender to You today and pray that You would be Lord of this life of mine. If you've never done that, I invite you to do that today. If you have done that but never followed Christ in believer's baptism, I invite you to follow Christ and take a stand and get in the water, as it were, and say, Lord, I'm identifying with You today. I want to be a follower of Jesus. If you're a follower of Jesus, but you've been avoiding the cost, I invite you today to come to Jesus afresh and say, Lord, forgive me for running from the cost. I embrace it today for the gospel's sake. And I invite you to lead the way, to come and say, I'm going to embrace the strange gospel of Jesus. And I'm going to be a man or a woman who embraces the gospel and follows it with all that I have. God leading you to unite with this church. Pray that you would do whatever the Lord says in obedience to Him so that He would get glory from your life